Nothing to tell you that you don't already know. A, he's a porn star. B, he's straight.
No, he isn't.
Sean, just because someone does gay sex doesn't mean they're gay.
We really wanted to get a film that was entertaining, but also had something serious on its mind.
There's lots of lesbians wearing cotton and the porta potty's full.
I like to lick them with pleasure on your head.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. There's no queer seat at the UN table, there's more to the fluffer than flesh on film, and there's music mixed with laughs from the audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 26, 2002. A United Nations committee this week voted 8-6 to deny consultative status to ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association. ILGA had briefly been the first and only gay-identified organization to win that status with ECOSOC, the UN's Economic and Social Council, allowing the group to attend and make input to ECOSOC meetings. But ILGA lost its consultative status in 1995 as the result of a campaign begun by U.S. Senator Jesse Helms. It was alleged at the time that ILGA supported pedophilia, and those allegations again dominated this week's extensive debate in the UN Committee on Non-Governmental Organizations. ILGA had always maintained a strong position against the exploitation of children, and since 1997 has required all its member groups to explicitly condemn pedophilia in hopes of regaining its UN status. But that failed to satisfy the Sudan representative, while the Pakistan and Senegal representatives expressed doubt that they could support any homosexual organization, in the words of the official UN report of the meeting. While some nations sought to delay a vote on ILGA's fate to allow more time for evidence gathering and consensus building, their move was rejected by a vote of 11-7. The nations voting to deny ILGA consultative status were China, Ethiopia, Lebanon, Pakistan, the Russian Federation, Senegal, Sudan, and Tunisia. The minorities supporting ILGA were Bolivia, Chile, France, Germany, Romania, and the U.S. Algeria, Colombia, Cuba, India, and Turkey abstained. Several other nations participated in the debate as observers, with Canada's representative actively defending ILGA.
Norway this week became the first nation in the world to have an open gay heading its government, albeit briefly. King Harald met with Finance Minister Per Christian Foss to recognize him as acting Prime Minister, while both Prime Minister Kjell Bondevik and Foreign Minister Jan Petersen were traveling outside the country. While Foss expressed a hope that the media attention would advance gay and lesbian civil rights in other countries, he modestly noted he was only doing his job. Foss, a veteran Conservative Party member of parliament, made international headlines last week when he confirmed that he is the first member of a government to have registered a legal same-gender partnership.
Hopes for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples were dashed this week in Slovakia and Colombia. The Slovakian cabinet unanimously rejected a bill to create registered partnerships carrying most of the legal benefits of marriage. Justice Minister Jan Črnogorský of the Christian Democratic Party declared that there will never be a government in Slovakia which would pass such a law, and if there ever was, it would lead the country into decline and devalue heterosexual families. The bill, developed in conjunction with gay and lesbian activists, was the first of its kind ever to be introduced in the Slovakian parliament and is said to have had some support in each of the parliamentary parties.
Colombia's legislature has stalled consideration of a bill to create registered partnerships until its next session. A legislative committee had already stripped the bill down to just a fifth of its original content before approving it, but the measure would still provide for inheritance and pension rights, social security benefits, and spousal support after dissolution. While disappointed at the delay, at least some activists are pleased that the issue has become a matter of public debate.
In Britain's House of Lords, a Liberal Democratic Party private members' bill to create registered partnerships was debated this week on its second reading. Although the opposition Conservative Party leadership has taken a stand against it, a growing movement within that party to soften its traditional anti-gay stance has been able to win a free vote on the measure. Anglican bishops and more traditional Tories continue to oppose it on the grounds that it would undermine marriage. During the debate, Open Gay Lord Ali of the ruling Labour Party challenged his government to support the bill. While the Blair government has remained silent on that score so far, it's reportedly preparing a bill that would enable transsexuals to contract legal marriages, something they haven't been able to do because Britain refuses to revise their birth certificates following sex reassignment surgery. Meanwhile, Britain's leading lawsuit for transsexual marriages, that of transwoman Elizabeth Bellinger, who actually was married to her husband of 20 years by a clerk who didn't question that she was female, has been accepted for a hearing by the Law Lords, the UK's highest court.
There were also developments regarding gay and lesbian couples in the US this week. The Democratic Party's governing National Committee approved a resolution calling for federal Social Security benefits to be extended to same-gender partners. All working Americans are required to pay into the retirement system, but gay and lesbian partners do not benefit from it as such. This is the first time a major U.S. political party has called for formal recognition of and financial benefits for gay and lesbian couples. The Democratic National Committee also renewed its support for federal response to anti-gay hate crimes.
Vermont is the only U.S. state to have created so-called civil unions carrying all the state-level benefits of legal marriage. But this week, a first attempt to have another U.S. state recognize them failed in a Georgia appellate court. The Georgia Court of Appeals rejected Susan Freer's bid to sue for overnight visitation with her three sons from a previous heterosexual marriage. Her visitation has been limited for the last year by a court order denying overnight visits to a parent who is cohabiting with someone not related by blood or marriage. Freer argued unsuccessfully that the civil union she contracted with her partner in Vermont should qualify. Freer plans to appeal to the Georgia Supreme Court.
In Chile, prison inmates can receive visits only from spouses or partners of the opposite gender. One gay man tried to sidestep this rule by donning women's clothing and borrowing a female friend's ID to visit his partner at the jail in Osorno. Although the La Cuarta newspaper said the man in drag attracted whistles as he waited in line, guards noted his hairy arms and strip-searched him. He was arrested for using a false identity and has been scheduled for a court appearance on that charge.
Arrests of gay men on debauchery charges continue to spread in Egypt. Last week, at least eight more men were arrested in Damanhour, the provincial capital of Al Bahira. Previous arrests had been in the Cairo area, including four men arrested in November whose scheduled trial was delayed this week, and the 53 arrests made in the infamous May police raid on a gay-inclusive Nile riverboat club, which resulted in 27 convictions. The latest arrests have so far been protested by Amnesty International Australia and by IGLHRC, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission.
In the U.S., the Michigan Court of Appeals this week upheld the second-degree murder conviction and 25-year-to-life sentence in the notorious so-called Jenny Jones talk show case. In 1995, Jonathan Schmitz shot open gay Scott Amador to death 3 days after a taping of the Jenny Jones show in which Amador revealed his secret crush on Schmitz. Schmitz had previously won a retrial only to be convicted a second time. This week, the appellate court rejected his claim that the trial court should have allowed more evidence of his history of mental problems that might have reduced his charge and sentence.
In Canada, an Ontario court dismissed on technical grounds a gay and lesbian bookstore's constitutional appeal of provincial film censorship practices. Glad Day Bookshop and its owner John Scythes will be sentenced next month for selling Dissent, a video not approved by the Ontario Film Review Board. The fine could run as high as $100,000 Canadian, which Scythes says could bankrupt the store. He'll appeal the dismissal of the store's claim that the Provincial Film Review Board's screening fee serves to tax-free expression and to discriminate against those marketing to marginalized groups.
And finally, Also in Canada, Toronto drag artist and self-described supermodel Enza Anderson appeared this week in the first official debate among candidates for leadership of the right-wing opposition Canadian Reform Alliance Party. As Enza remarked in her speech, "At its worst, voters believed that the Canadian Alliance was a political shelter for closet racists, bigots, and homophobes." There has been ample evidence for that point of view, but Enza went on to say that she does not believe that's what the Alliance is, but rather that it is a party of all the people. She claimed that the guy in a dress thing is hardly worth a mention by comparison to Alliance concerns for larger issues, and called on party members to stand with her for equality and human rights. It's doubtful anyone anticipated as uniformly serious-minded a speech as Enza gave. According to Toronto's gay and lesbian biweekly Extra, the media were focused almost entirely on hopes of a photograph of Enza kissing incumbent Alliance leader Stockwell Day, a former preacher with an anti-gay record in Alberta's provincial government. In the past, Enza created a big photo op when she kissed Toronto Mayor Mel Lastman, whom she ran against in the last election. Although a Day advisor insisted that at some point he shook her hand, Day took care to spend the evening well out of Enza's reach.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 26th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We'll disprove the myth that lesbians have no sense of humor and hear some fine music and poetry, too, later in the program.
Doctor, doctor, you gotta help me. Sex is all I see. People going at it all around me. Everywhere I look, sex is all I see.
From Honolulu to Houston, from Auckland to Dublin, a new film called The Fluffer is heading toward a multiplex near you. Despite its sexual themes and eye-catching promotion, The Fluffer is not a shallow excuse to put naked men on screen, and it's not about pillows. This Way Out's Steve Pride has some preview clips and chats with the life partners who are the co-directors, co-writers behind the film.
The Fluffer. In burlesque, it's the comedian who warms up the crowd. In real estate, it's someone who does last-minute cosmetics when a house is being shown. In the adult gay film world, it's the crew member who performs the off-camera stimulation that enables a male porn star to perform at his fullest potential. It's also the title of a new movie that raises the question, what does it take to be a man?
I'm Wash West.
I'm Richard Glatzer.
The directors of The Fluffer. We both worked on the script together. Richard was more like a script editor, and I was generating the original material.
It's about Sean, who becomes fixated on Johnny Rebel, the porn star, and goes into the gay industry to be near him, and then finds out that the object of his affections is straight.
Are you the owners here?
Yes, we are.
We're going to put a new highway right through this piece of land.
Billy Joe, the city boy, thinks he's going to plow right through our daddy's farm.
I think we're going to have to plow through him first.
Oh, yeah?
Cut, that's great.
Hey, who writes this stuff?
I do.
Oh, right on. Would it make more sense if the country boys gangbang the city boy? Just a thought.
Johnny Rebel is always a top. He's a straight boy.
He's straight?
Gay for pay. Lots of them are.
About 5 years ago, when I was living in New Orleans in Louisiana, I was in a second-hand bookshop and I happened across Linda Lovelace's autobiography, Ordeal, which is a very good read. And Linda Lovelace was the star of a 70s oral sex bonanza, Deep Throat. And I got reading the book and she described what a fluffer was. And I just thought, what a ludicrous job description. And became interested from that point on, and then started thinking of the implications of the power dynamic between a fluffer and the person who is being fluffed.
It was an interesting thing with the title, because we found that everybody immediately wanted to know what the movie was and wanted to see the script, but people, for the same reason, were terrified of it. And we also found that it is a serious film, that people wanted it to be some sort of outrageous, sexy comedy. It does have a lot of laughs in it, but that's not the way I would describe the film.
We really wanted to get a film that was entertaining and that people would have a really good time watching, but also had something serious on its mind, because the more we looked into this relationship, the worshipper and the worshipped, the more sort of serious it becomes. And we were dealing with obsession, which ultimately is a very serious subject too. Porn really presents a fantasy which is often about the inaccessible. I think desire is fueled by things that are inaccessible. Growing up gay, you soon realize that straight men are usually inaccessible.
It's about the allure of what you can't have. And I also feel that for us, for gay people, that when you come out of the closet, you feel as if you've resolved all of your personal problems. And one of the things we're trying to say is that you take a lot of baggage with you out of that closet. And one of the things is that if you've been suppressing your sexuality all through adolescence, that you might have all sorts of kinks there that need to be worked out or don't, depending on, you know, how well you're getting along in life. We did find that there is this incredible strain through gay culture, and it's gone on for decades of wanting straight guys, wanting what you can't have. And we wanted to show how it can, you know, mess somebody up, which it does with Sean.
And really, Sean's problem is he wants a straight guy over a gay guy. You know, I'm not saying it's wrong to fantasize about straight guys. Everyone does it. That's fine. It's just when it becomes a barrier in your life that's preventing you from relating to other gay people emotionally, that it's something you know that he had to tackle to move on with his life. When you're very young and maybe you don't even know what gay is and you're just desiring men, you just desire all men, you take your pick from the full spectrum, and then, you know, after a few broken hearts or black eyes or whatever, you realize that no, you're only meant to fancy this 10% who are identified as gay and are part of gay culture and who love Madonna. And then there's still the 90% great unwashed straight guys. You can't automatically just throw the switch and not be attracted to them. And I think what the film's doing is saying sometimes you have to go and look at the roots of your sexuality to understand where your present day sexuality is headed.
I think also if you look at recent gay films, including my previous film, Grief, an awful lot of them are about someone's attraction to a straight guy. And so often, not in the case of Grief, the films resolve very kind of happily. You know, the straight guy isn't really straight and he really wants to be with the gay guy, and they go off happily into the sunset. And I think it's a really unhealthy fantasy. I mean, it's nice if you know it's a fantasy and, you know, oh, that's a funny little idea we had. But I think a lot of people think that's what life's about. And we wanted to show how difficult it is when you really do fantasize somebody who's straight and who is toying with you for whatever reasons of his own. What a mess that can lead you into.
Did you have fun tonight?
It was fine. You?
Yeah. No, it sucked.
I've been watching you with him.
And?
There's nothing to tell you that you don't already know. A, he's a porn star. B, he's straight.
No, he isn't.
Sean, just because someone does gay sex doesn't mean they're gay.
What does it mean, then?
Absolutely nothing. You just go through with it. Women understand that from the get-go.
Well, he's different with me.
What, because of this fluffing thing? All that matters is that in his mind, he's a straight boy. You ain't never gonna change that.
In my mind, I'll always be on my knees in front of him.
Yeah, well, the two of you should be very happy together.
Our original intent wasn't to direct together. It was just to work on the script together. And then that just was working out so well that why not extend it, you know, into shooting the film?
It was really like having a kid together, actually. It was sort of like we had this thing in common that we had to bring from being very small to fully realize, send it off to school to do its own thing. And we both cared for it and loved it like you would a child.
If you're immersed in the material enough, and if you really have an understanding of each other's sensibility, it's a great thing. I think there's so many demands placed on a director and on a feature film. The production designer needs to know what color to paint Sean's bedroom at the same moment that the DP's talking about shot setups, and the actors need to work out some backstory and all this kind of stuff. And if you really can trust each other, that you know the material, it's great to have two bodies there. And I think we knew this material inside out, and, you know, it was enhancing the film to have two of us.
I really came to LA about 6 years ago with the idea of making The Fluffer. And I didn't want to write from second-hand impressions of the sex industry. I wanted to find out what it was really like. So I actually went into the porn industry to make adult feature films. I wasn't that interested in making conventional porn like everybody else's movies. I found that most porn to me is really, really, really boring.
The film is called Hot Summer of Sex. I wanted boys on beaches, boys in boats, playing in the sea. All you gave me was swimming pools, swimming pools, swimming pools.
The sex is the main thing, Alan. There's plenty of hardcore.
But for $30,000, there better be. I wanted waves. I wanted sand. I wanted swimming pools.
You got swimming pools.
Don't confuse me.
I think it's a story of liberation at a really deep level. What do you want people to take away from the movie?
Well, I mean, to me, one of the things that's interesting about the movie is it holds up two very different kinds of men. There's Sean, the fluffer, who's very boyish and not particularly macho. And then there's Johnny Rebel, the porn star, whose stock in trade is seeming, you know, really cocky and masculine and charismatic. And I think during the course of the film, you start to see a strength in Sean that is unexpected. And you start to see the limits of that kind of macho masculinity. For me, that's one of the things you take away from the film, is to see the strength in being gay, the strength in addressing your own demons and trying to hopefully move forward with your life, which is something that Sean does. As I was saying before, a lot of gay films films have these kind of quick little sentimental happy endings, which to me are less affirming than something like The Fluffer, where you see somebody really grappling with their demons and managing to get on with their lives, which is to me what Sean does in the end. There was a great line in the LA Weekly Review by Ernest Hardy where he said, "Sometimes getting up off your knees is a hero's journey."
This has been a conversation with filmmakers and partners Richard Glatzer and Wash West. The Fluffer is from First Run Features and TLA Releasing. To find out when the film will screen at a theater near you, point your internet browser to www.fluffer.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Everywhere I look, a sexy skull I see.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else. There's a hint of humor that ties together the latest CDs from three lesbian artists, but there's a serious side to these two musicians and an award-winning slam poet, as you'll discover as we open this month's audio file.
Lisa Koch's new CD is called Both of Me, and it showcases the many sides of her musical talent. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile.
Every day I find it happens every time I look at you. I see your lips, I see your smile. You make me dizzy. Every night it's clear.
When asked to describe her style, Lisa Koch does it this way.
Folk, pop, jazz-flavored kind of thing with just a touch of insanity. I love to look at the quirky side of life. Life is funny.
On one of the CD's comedy songs, Lisa takes the premise of women who are dragged along to women's festivals and turns one of our disco standards upside down.
When someone said, "Were you at Michigan?" I'd smile and say, "Uh-huh," but that was wrong.
See, I never heard folk songs, now I'm here. A festival, there's lots of lesbians wearing cotton and the porta potty's full. I should have never said I'd come, we could have gone to Waikiki. Now I'm stuck inside this teeny tiny tent with no TP.
You can find out more about Lisa Koch and her CD, Both of Me, at www.heylisa.com. That's HEYLISA.com. Slam poet Alex Olson pulls no punches on her spoken word CD, Built Like That.
Now we got Cinderella. She's chilling at home, quite content with being alone. She's playing with the mice and singing with the birds, and they're the only ones who ever heard these words. She said, "I'll get the damn pumpkin, do it all right. Weep and lose my slipper, freak out in the night. But there's one thing that the prince may not like. It's a fairy god I'm after. I'm a dyke."
Olson describes slam poetry as a form of art accountable to the audience rather than to literary critics.
Attention, shoppers. Attention, 9-to-5 folk, cell phone masses, the up-and-coming classes. Attention, sports utility, plastic surgery, suburbanites, Viagra popping, Gucci shopping, urbanites. Attention, George Clooney loonies, promise keeper sheep, stockbrokers, sleepwalkers, big investment talkers, Ricky Lake watchers. Attention, Walmart congregation, shop till you drop generation. Attention, nation, America's on sale. We've unstocked the welfare pantry to restock the Wall Street gentry. It's economically elementary because values don't pay. Yes, American dreams are on permanent layaway.
You can learn more about Alex Olson at www.alexolson.com. That's AlixOlson.com.
Jamie Anderson is back with another outstanding album. This one is called Listen, and the title song gets a little personal.
You followed me around, I hardly knew you. Then we talked a while, you were kinda cute. That night you saw me on the stage, did the border start to blur? You whispered to your friend, I want her. You said she's taken, you didn't listen.
Listen was one of the hardest songs to perform on the album because I feel so vulnerable when I sing it. In fact, for about a year after I wrote the song, I was afraid to do it.
The album captures Jamie's unique ability to combine songs about relationships, out lyrics, and what she's best known for, her sense of humor.
I'm hungry with desire. Oh, my wanting lips. I breathe heavy, thinking of luscious potato chips. Give me hot barbecue, crinkle, or even plain. I like to lick them, but pleasure again. Potato chips.
You can find out more about Jamie Anderson and her CD Listen at www.jamieanderson.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041, or online at info@audiophile.org. That's info@audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
I like to bite them. It makes me feel alive. Potato chips.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. The Johnny Depp Clones performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on KUCR Riverside, California, Plains FM, Christchurch, New Zealand, WDFH, Ossining, New York, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.